From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. We examine how Israeli-Palestinian tensions are boiling over in Jerusalem and the West Bank. A new study says global terrorist activity doubled last year.
In fact, we've seen a tremendous rise in terrorism amongst Islamic extremism groups.
And the busiest port complex in the United States experiences congestion as the holiday shopping season begins. It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. With Tuesday's attack on a Jerusalem synagogue by two Palestinians, leaving five people dead and another five wounded, the violence between Israelis and Palestinians has taken on renewed and dangerous dimensions. Simmering tensions have boiled over into a rash of attacks against Israelis, clashes between Palestinians and police, and attacks at mosques and synagogues. VOA Scott Bobb examines the trend and its root causes in this report from Jerusalem.
Israeli and Palestinian leaders have reacted strongly to the recent violence, in which more than a dozen Israelis and Palestinians have been killed and dozens more have been injured. Among them were clashes between Palestinians and Israeli police, sparked by visits by right-wing Israeli politicians and their supporters to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, or Temple Mount, an area that is revered by both Muslims and Jews. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused the head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, of inciting the violence. He said instead of calming tempers, Abbas is inflaming them. Instead of telling the truth, he is disseminating lies. Mr. Abbas said it was Mr. Netanyahu who was inciting violence by allowing the visits. He says what they are doing now, they are leading the region and the world to a religious war, a devastating one. The most recent violence has embroiled holy sites for both Israelis and Palestinians. The Temple Mount continues to be a flashpoint, though last Friday's Muslim prayers at the site were calm for the first time in weeks. Israeli police lifted restrictions on Muslims praying there, and the visits by right-wing Israelis were curtailed. After Israel captured the East Jerusalem holy place in the 1967 Arab-Israeli War, it kept an existing arrangement that allowed non-Muslims to visit the site Muslims call Haram el-Sharif, but not to pray there. Jewish activists want to end this restriction, saying all religions should be allowed to pray there, the location of the ancient Jewish temple. Many Muslims believe this is an effort to establish Jewish sovereignty over the holy site. One of the Israeli activists was severely wounded in an assassination attempt. His attacker, a Palestinian from East Jerusalem, was later killed in a shootout with police. An Israeli political columnist and self-proclaimed nationalist, Amiel Ungar, says for a century this issue has been used by Palestinians to, in his words, internationalize the holy site.
Nobody is threatening the Temple Mount, but this has always been a useful thing. And I would say from the Jewish side, the effort to increase the Jewish presence is a reaction to Arab encroachment on the site, and it's also a reaction to the lax attitude taken by Israeli governments.
But Israeli society is deeply divided on such issues. Many Israelis criticize the right-wing activists for fomenting unrest. Retired Hebrew University professor Matti Steinberg says the activists are taking advantage of their influence within the Netanyahu government.
We have to refer to the efforts of the rightists to seize the moment, let us say, the fact that they are on the horse in Israel, and to implement fait accompli in Jerusalem and the West Bank.
Many experts say the violence is also due to rising tensions over social issues. The head of East Jerusalem's International Peace and Cooperation Institute, Rami Nasrallah, says there is a growing frustration among Palestinians, especially the young.
And it's have all to do with the failure of the Israeli system to provide proper services and housing solutions and education and services, etc. So it is mainly the urban conflict. And the issue of Al-Aqsa Mosque turned it into a religious conflict rather than an ethno-national one.
He says police have arrested more than 2,000 Arab youths in the past 6 months, some arbitrarily, because of almost daily demonstrations in which several Palestinians have been killed and many police officers wounded. The Palestinian Authority's Minister for Jerusalem, Adnan al-Husseini, says the situation is very dangerous. He says all this talk about calm is nonsense. The Palestinian street in Jerusalem is boiling over. The youth are very angry, and this anger is a sign of danger. As a result, he says, we are heading for a very difficult time. The violence has fomented what appear to be revenge attacks on mosques and synagogues, including Tuesday's attack. Analysts say tensions were already heightened after the 50-day conflict in the Gaza Strip in July and August, in which 2,200 Palestinians and 72 Israelis died. That conflict followed the collapse of a 9-month-long U.S.-led effort to revive stalled peace talks. These foundered after each side posed conditions that the other found unacceptable. And the prospects for a peaceful resolution in the near future do not appear good. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Jerusalem.
In an unprecedented move, the UN General Assembly's Human Rights Committee voted Tuesday to ask the Security Council to consider referring North Korea's grave human rights situation to the International Criminal Court. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
By a strong majority, countries voted to press for accountability for egregious human rights abuses committed by the regime in North Korea. Sponsored by the European Union and Japan, the resolution was written based on the findings of an independent special rapporteur appointed by the UN Secretary General and on a Commission of Inquiry report. That report included testimony from more than 80 victims and witnesses and detailed widespread, systematic, and gross human rights violations, including torture, arbitrary detention, enforced disappearances, executions, and inhumane treatment. U.S. Ambassador Elizabeth Cousins told the committee the situation of human rights in North Korea demands a strong international response.
With this resolution, the international community must send a clear message to the DPRK regime that human rights violations must stop and that those most responsible will be held accountable.
The North Koreans lobbied hard in the lead-up to Tuesday's vote to try to get the reference to the International Criminal Court removed from the draft resolution, dangling the possibility of allowing a visit for the special rapporteur. When that failed, Cuba sponsored an amendment seeking to cut the reference, but it was voted down in the committee. Cho Myung-nam, the Deputy Director General of North Korea's UN mission, told the committee that the draft resolution was the product of political and military confrontation and plots against his government. He said the Commission of Inquiry report was full of fabricated testimonies from a handful of criminal defectors and thus full of groundless allegations. He accused the United States and its allies of being behind a campaign against Pyongyang and appeared to threaten the resumption of internationally forbidden nuclear tests.
The outrageous and unreasonable human rights campaign staged by the United States and its followers in their attempts to eliminate the state and social system of the DPRK is compelling us not to refrain any further from conducting nuclear tests.
This is the 10th time North Korea's rights record has come in for annual scrutiny at the General Assembly. 111 countries supported the call for further action, while 55 abstained, nearly half of them African nations that have mixed feelings about the ICC. Pyongyang's international isolation was evident, as only 19 countries voted against the measure, mainly other states with questionable rights records, or ones that are subject to similar scrutiny by the General Assembly's Human Rights Committee. They included Iran, Syria, Cuba, Venezuela, Zimbabwe, and Belarus. Security Council members, China and Russia, voted against the measure, which could veto any effort to refer North Korea to the ICC in the 15-nation council. Human Rights Watch's UN Director Philippe Bolopion told VOA that ignoring North Korean human rights abuses would be a very short-sighted strategy.
We hope that Russia and China will hear the very united voice of the international community on this and allow the UN Security Council to finally refer the situation in North Korea to the International Criminal Court.
He said Tuesday's vote is historic and a huge victory for the victims of the Pyongyang regime. In the coming weeks, the draft resolution will go to the General Assembly for formal adoption. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. In its second Global Terrorism Index released this week, the think tank Institute for Global Economics and Peace warned that terrorist activity in 2013 increased more than 60% to nearly 18,000 incidents versus just over 11,000 in 2012. It also said the number of countries that experienced 50 or more terrorist-related deaths nearly doubled. The report, which gathers its information from the Global Terrorism Database, says most lives lost to terrorist activity occurred in just five countries: Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nigeria, and Syria. The report says the number of people killed in terrorist attacks rose largely as a result of unrest in the Middle East and Nigeria. It says a majority of those fatalities are claimed by just four terrorist organizations: the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, Boko Haram in Nigeria, the Taliban in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. The Institute's Michelle Breslauer was asked by VOA's Victor Beatty what is common among the five countries where most terrorist activity has occurred.
These five countries are all countries that are already embroiled in larger conflicts. Syria didn't record terrorist attacks before the civil war started, and now we see it as one of the top countries that's impacted. In fact, we've seen a tremendous rise in terrorism amongst Islamic extremism groups in those countries. So there is also a religious motivation to this rise.
IS, Islamic State, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, and Taliban were blamed for two-thirds of all terrorist fatalities. How successful are the strategies against these groups?
Well, I think what is important about what the report is showing is that despite many years of counterterrorism efforts and military interventions and significant amounts of funding coming from the U.S. and other countries to try to counter these groups or these rising threats, we're still seeing this increase in terrorist activity. So clearly we need to reassess the way we confront this threat. Military intervention has not been shown to end terrorist groups. What we've seen, and through a study that RAND did, is that really policing, effective community policing, and political processes are what can help end terrorist groups and include them in political processes and state building. Only 7% of military interventions over the period studied had been effective in ending terrorist groups.
A lot of countries in the world are not subject to the kind of terrorist attacks that these five countries that you listed are. What's the difference?
Well, I think that the difference is that we are seeing groups that are going across borders in these countries that are religiously motivated, whereas in many other countries around the world, terrorism, even if there is an impact, is motivated by nationalistic or political aims, not religious extremism.
The face of terrorism seems to be changing. Do those tactics against counterterrorism tactics need to change as well?
I think that they do. We see now the rise of the movement of countering violent extremism. That's similar to a peace-building approach, and that tries to aim at preventing people from joining terrorist groups, from becoming violent extremists. And I think that that type of longer-term, more preventative thinking is needed. And hard tactics like military interventions aren't seen to be working. We need to look at what are the factors that are leading to terrorism. And it's not growth of terrorist groups in areas that are poor. It's not economic factors. It's really group grievances, high levels of criminality, and state-sponsored violence that create the types of environments that are conducive for the rise of terrorist groups. So addressing these factors, which is a long-term goal, and trying to reduce group grievances, increase social cohesion, trust, and legitimacy of the state services and rule of law are areas to invest in.
Michelle Breslauer of the Institute for Global Economics and Peace. The report says 13 countries are at risk of increasing terrorist activities, including Bangladesh, Burundi, the Central African Republic, Ivory Coast, Ethiopia, Iran, Israel, Mali, Mexico, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, and Uganda. The Los Angeles and Long Beach port complex in Southern California is the main gateway for trade between the United States and Asia. $1 billion in trade goes through the ports each day, but much of that cargo is being delayed by what some people describe as a massive congestion problem in the ports just before the holiday shopping season. Elizabeth Lee looks at the causes.
The Christmas season is supposed to be the best time of year for Liang Liang's wholesale business if he had the merchandise to sell. His customers are asking for the merchandise, but he can't get it. I feel very helpless, he says. Liang is still waiting for cargo that arrived at the port at the start of the month. It usually takes 2 days to a week to receive it, but now he has no idea when the goods will clear the port. The ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles make up the busiest container port complex in the U.S. Port officials say there are several reasons why it is experiencing congestion. One problem involves the wheeled frames called chassis that hold the shipping containers. Port of Long Beach spokesman Lee Peterson says the chassis haven't been where they need to be for trucks to move the containers.
Up until the last couple of years, the chassis were owned by the shipping companies. But in recent years, the shipping companies have decided not to own those chassis. So now those are owned by fleets who are still kind of working on their system for supplying those chassis to the truckers and the terminals as they're needed.
Other causes for the congestion? Cargo ships, up to 50% bigger than those of a few years ago, are arriving with more containers. But there are fewer truck drivers to haul the containers away, says Craig Merrilies of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union.
The conditions are so bad, the pay is so low, and the problems are so serious for these workers that they're quitting.
Truck driver Martin Solis is thinking of retiring.
That's a hard for a driver to make any money in here.
Solis says it usually takes 2 to 4 hours to drop off and pick up cargo at the port, but yesterday...
Yesterday, I'm making it 9 hours.
He says the port congestion is made worse by contract negotiations between the Pacific Maritime Association, the organization that represents shipping companies, and the Union for West Coast Port Workers.
The guys who are working at the flip machines, supposed to they got to start at like 8 a.m. And they coming in and they appear to start at work like 8:45.
The shipping companies say the union has refused to dispatch hundreds of skilled workers to the L.A. and Long Beach ports. The union's Craig Merrilies says that's not accurate.
Those exaggerations and distortions try and point the finger at the union, when in fact the industry and employers have been responsible for massive congestion problems. People are frustrated. They're upset. They feel they're being scapegoated, and I can imagine why they, you know, in some cases may not feel like they owe their employer 100%.
The Pacific Maritime Association says there are also union slowdowns in other West Coast ports just before the holiday shopping season. Port officials say by this time of year, most of the holiday cargo is already in warehouses and stores. But Liang Liang is still waiting for his holiday merchandise. The cargo I want can't get here, he says. And when the season is over, he can't sell off his merchandise. Liang can do nothing but wait as contract negotiations continue and the other problems persist at the ports. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Well, hopefully they can straighten all that out before the holiday season actually gets here in evidence. Well, thanks very much for joining us today for International Edition. Remember, you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
This is Today in History. On November 19, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln delivered one of the most famous speeches in American history at the dedication of the Military Cemetery at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Lincoln's 10 sentences received little attention at first, but Northern newspapers took note of their powerful message in which he articulated the meaning of the U.S. Civil War. On this day in 1887, fictional detective Sherlock Holmes made his debut in A Study in Scarlet, a story written by British physician Conan Doyle. Specializing in solving unusual cases using his extraordinary powers of observation and logical reasoning, Sherlock Holmes would appear in 4 novels and 56 short stories. On this day in 1942, the Soviet Red Army launched a huge counteroffensive against German troops that turned the tide in the Battle of Stalingrad and eventually in the war between Germany and the Soviet Union. And on this day in 1961, record industry history was made when Chubby Checker's original hit song, The Twist, re-entered the charts on its way to becoming the first record to reach number one for a second time. The Twist reached the top position in 1960, but Checker's appearance on the popular Ed Sullivan Show pushed it back onto the charts. Come on, baby! Chubby Checker was born Ernest Evans, but the wife of TV host Dick Clark suggested the name Chubby Checker as a takeoff on then-popular singer Fats Domino. The name stuck, and Chubby Checker and his dance craze, The Twist, became a part of music history. I'm Dave DeForest with Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State welcomes the release of 2 U.S. citizens from North Korea, also known as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK. The 2 men, Kenneth Bay and Matthew Miller, were held for 2 years and 7 months, respectively. The State Department had long called on North Korean authorities to release these individuals on humanitarian grounds. Bay and Miller were released and returned to the United States on November 8th after Director of National Intelligence James Clapper flew to North Korea as an envoy of President Barack Obama. A 3rd detained citizen, Jeffrey Fowle, was released from North Korea last month. At a press briefing, President Obama said he couldn't be happier for the families as we enter into the holidays to know that their loved ones are back. It's a good news story. President Obama stressed, however, that the trip to North Korea by Mr. Clapper did not involve some of the broader issues that have been the source of primary concern when it comes to North Korea, in particular its development of nuclear capacity. President Obama said that resolving the broader fundamental conflict with the North Koreans needs more than small gestures like the release of the detained individuals. It's going to take, he said, a broader understanding on the part of the North Koreans that all the countries in the region, including China, including the Republic of Korea, including Japan, consider this to be their number one security priority, making sure that we do not have a nuclearized Korean peninsula. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki said in an interview that the United States will continue to press the North Koreans about concerns over their nuclear program, as well as over their abysmal human rights record, one of the worst in the world. Nothing has changed, she said, regardless of the fact that we now have our 3 U.S. citizens back.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.